Welcome to another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast, a production of the Criminal Law Department at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School in Charlottesville, Virginia. Every 2 weeks, we release a new episode. Today, we're going to have a conversation about a recent opinion from the Court of Appeals for the Armed Forces. Please note that these episodes may contain facts and circumstances surrounding criminal trials. Listener discretion is advised.
All rise. Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Honorable United States Court of Appeals of the Armed Forces is now open and in session. God save the United States of America in this honorable court.
Welcome back to CAF Chats. I am Major Andrew Britt, and today I'm joined by
Major James Barrett. Thanks for having me today, Andrew.
Absolutely. We also have two special guests, Cadet Reagan Ayler and Cadet Taus Dye. Reagan is a rising junior at the University of Michigan, and Taus is a rising senior at Brigham Young University. They are spending 3 weeks with the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School. How have you been enjoying the summer so far?
I've been enjoying it a lot, thanks. I'm going into my third year of ROTC, and I'm hoping to join the JAG Corps one day after law school, so it's been a great experience to come to the JAG school and learn about where I'll hopefully end up in a few years.
Well, thank you. And Taus?
I've had the summer of my life. These 3 weeks have been absolutely incredible, getting to learn just what exactly the JAG Corps is, what it does, and hopefully figuring out a place where I will one day fit.
And not to put you both on the spot, but you've been able to work with multiple departments in the JAG school. Which one has been your absolute favorite?
ADC, for sure.
Has to be, hands down.
Awesome. All right. Well,
I did not pay them to say that.
Nope. They are not paid for their testimonials today. We did buy them lunch. Okay. Andrew, we've got the United States versus Davis, huh?
Yes, we do. It's case number 240152, and it's out of the Army. Reagan, can you get us started with the facts of the case?
Of course. So Davis was charged with one specification of attempted sexual assault and two specifications of sexual assault in violations of Articles 80 and 120 of the UCMJ. The charges arise from allegations that he sexually assaulted a sergeant on two occasions at her home. Davis was arraigned by the First Military Judge, who is the Chief Circuit Judge of the Army's Fifth Judicial Circuit. Notably, the First Military Judge had issued two unrelated rulings a month prior to this arraignment, where the First Military Judge ruled that a military accused has the right to a unanimous guilty verdict. And in both of these cases, which were U.S. v. Dial and U.S. v. Ferreira, the government petitioned ACCA for writs of prohibition, and ACCA stayed the proceedings. Because of the stays, the First Military Judge decided that he would not, quote, rule on any further unanimous verdict motions until the Army Court issued an opinion on the issue. He then explained his reasoning in 3 points in an affidavit to ACCA. First, the defense would likely continue to file unanimous guilty verdict motions in all future cases, regardless of the presiding judge. Second, the government would likely not provide any additional authorities to support its position on the issue, so the First Military Judge's rulings were unlikely to change. And third, the situation would likely result in stays of proceedings that would last for months and shut down at least half of the courts martial in Europe and the Middle East until the issue is resolved. So, to approve the efficiency of the court, the First Military Judge detailed the case to the only other Fifth Circuit judge, the Second Military Judge. This was on April 4th, 2022, which was after ACCA stayed Dial and Ferreira, but before it ruled on the government's writs. And on the same day, Davis filed a motion for unanimous verdict. The primary source of controversy in this reassignment is not whether the First Military Judge correctly handled the detail itself, as CAF ultimately ruled that he did, but his motivations for detailing the case in the first place. As the First Military Judge stated, he detailed the case in anticipation of a series of similar motions and stays that would be detrimental to the court's efficiency. But the fact that the First Military Judge's solution to the problem was detailing the case implies that he was counting on the Second Military Judge to deny any potential unanimous verdict rulings, even though he personally believed that Davis was entitled to unanimous verdict. This apparent denial of Davis's rights became the basis of both ACCA's and CAF's decision on whether the detailing was a structural error that warranted a reversal. And defense's concerns for Davis's rights were heightened when the Second Military Judge did deny their unanimous verdict motion in the same session as his first appearance in the proceedings. This was on April 4th, 2022. On May 23rd, Davis requested to be tried by the Second Military Judge alone instead of a panel. It was at this point that the Second Military Judge assembled a court-martial. Later, Davis stated in an affidavit filed with ACCA that he would not have requested a judge-alone trial and also would have asked for the Second Military Judge to be recused. But ultimately, the second military judge ended up acquitting Davis of the Article 80 attempt offense and convicting him of the two Article 120 offenses. He rejected the government's proposed sentence and gave Davis's requested sentence of a dishonorable discharge and 120 days of confinement for each specification to be served concurrently. At this point, the convening authority took no action with respect to the findings or the sentence.
Awesome, Reagan. Thank you so much. Cadet Dye, what do you got for us?
All right. Davis assigned the following error to the Army Court of Criminal Appeals: whether the judicial reassignment of Davis's case warrants reversal of the conviction. The ACCA set aside the findings and sentence and dismissed the charges with prejudice. At the outset, the ACCA concluded that the reassignment of the case from the first military judge to the second military judge constituted structural error mandating reversal, as the improper conduct of both trial judges affected the framework within which the trial proceeded. The court explained that upon his removal, the first military judge was disqualified from taking any further action in the case, regardless of his stated reason. Therefore, his act of detailing the second military judge was ultra vires. The ACCA further found the first military judge's reassignment decision to be unlawful, as it was made in pursuit of a particular result on an anticipated issue in the case. Regarding the second military judge, the ACCA interpreted his reference in his first affidavit to "do my part" as indicative of a predetermined intent to deny a likely unanimous verdict motion. The court also criticized both military judges for failing to disclose to the parties certain out-of-court events bearing upon their actions and the issue of judicial impartiality. According to the ACCA, this sub rosa episode violated the Fifth Amendment's due process clause and resulted in a structural error mandating reversal. The ACCA further held that even if the structural error were not present, Davis still met the plain error standard of review. Specifically, the court found that the first military judge clearly erred in detailing the case to the second military judge after he made the decision to remove himself, and that the government had not disproven prejudice to Davis beyond a reasonable doubt. Additionally, the court determined that reversal of the findings and sentence was warranted under United States v. Roach and the third prong of the Liljeburg test, which considers the risk of undermining public confidence in the judicial process. Ultimately, the ACCA dismissed the case with prejudice due to the irregularities at the trial level and the circumstances surrounding the second military judge's supplemental affidavit. Following the ACCA's decision, the Army TJAG filed a certificate for review of two issues. One, whether the Army Court erred in finding that the reassignment of Davis's case resulted in structural error, and two, whether the Army Court erred in finding that the reassignment resulted in prejudice, thus justifying dismissal of the case with prejudice.
Thank you, Taos. So we'll look at both of these issues just as the CAF did, which was in turn in the order in which they were certified by TJAG. For the structural error question, CAF begins by determining whether the change in military judges constituted a reassignment, a removal, a recusal, or a disqualification.
I don't mean to interrupt you there, Andrew, but can you kind of go through the three of those for the audience? What's the real difference?
Sure. The court said that there's four, but then they also collapsed recusal and disqualification into one in a footnote. A disqualification is a basis for a judge to not be able to sit on a case, whereas a recusal is the judge's refusal to sit based upon a disqualification. So in this way, they're kind of nested ideas. One is the basis and the other is the decision by the judge to remove themselves from the case.
So a judge that may have had been victim to a similar crime could decide to recuse themselves based upon a disqualification.
Absolutely. That is the distinction that they're drawing between those two. Separate from that, there's this idea of removal, and this involves another authority taking the sitting trial judge off of the case. And then finally, there's a reassignment, which is just a change in the presiding judge, which is typically and commonly done by a circuit judge who is just changing the judges within that individual circuit. CAF doesn't actually get into the standard for when something would qualify as a removal. They're just looking at the fact that there's a higher authority. So in this particular case, they quickly dispose of removal because they say that the chief trial judge nor any other higher authority replace the first military judge in the case. And for that reason, it doesn't qualify as a removal. So I think the analysis is kind of that simple.
Got it.
In regard to removal, but you're not looking at some underlying basis.
I think a removal might be in play if the military judge had committed some type of misconduct while sitting on the case. That still rises to a disqualification. But in this case, we don't have a removal or a recusal or a disqualification. What do we have here?
So here we have a reassignment. And both judges in this case, they viewed the change that occurred as a reassignment, which CAF notes was a routine action that occurred within this particular judicial circuit. So it was normal business that a judge would get reassigned on a case. CAF also highlights that there is a strong presumption that a judge is impartial, and the evidence in the record for this particular case is insufficient to rebut that presumption. Accordingly, there was not a basis for the first military judge to not be able to sit the case, so he was not disqualified and therefore did also not recuse himself. I think another component of the reassignment versus disqualification distinction is that if you reassign a case, it's not because you couldn't have sat the case. So theoretically, this case could have gone back to the first military judge.
Yes. And the implications of that distinction, though, for our purposes, for appellate review, is a big deal to Davis.
It is. It is. And as we'll see, it really goes into the framing of the type of error it is, which then ultimately dictates the prejudice test, which we'll get to and I think is going to be the takeaway from this case, if anything.
Awesome. Please continue. Sorry.
After concluding that the change was a reassignment, CAF goes on to find that the reassignment was improper. The first military judge reassigned the case so that he would not have to grant a likely defense motion for a unanimous verdict, with an intent to protect efficiency. CAF finds that the first military judge placed undue emphasis on efficiency over his belief that Davis had a constitutional right to a unanimous verdict. His reasoning was fundamentally flawed, though, because speed, while an important consideration, cannot trump protecting the rights of the accused. So CAF finds the first military judge's motivation was improper. The court also concludes that the second military judge was not disqualified. Even though the judges did not disclose their coordination in reassigning Davis's case, there was no basis for the second military judge to believe the first military judge was acting in an improper manner to require disclosure. Further, CAF rejects the suggestion that the second military judge's statement that he would do his part to mitigate any potential case backlog carries the predetermined intent to deny a likely unanimous verdict motion. I do want to turn this question to Reagan and to Taos. Do you think when the first military judge says, I'm doing this for efficiency, therefore, I'm giving it to somebody else because if I take the case, I'll rule in this way and that'll cause a delay. Do you think there's an implication there?
I would think that there would be an implication, yes. It seems like the first military judge was reassigning the case, hoping that the second military judge would not protect Davis's right to a unanimous verdict, which would be the location where you would find the issue because he was reassigning the case to promote efficiency, but behind the scenes, he was reassigning the case to get a different ruling on the unanimous verdict motion.
I think, though, when you read some of the original ACCA ruling, it goes into the fact that the second military judge had frequently offered to take some cases from the first military judge's plate to just help with overall efficiency, to help move cases along. So I think that there's some interpretation there that with the handing over of the case from the first military judge to the second military judge, you kind of see it going both ways, that there was nothing out of the ordinary. So you definitely understand where CAF is coming from, but I can also see it going the other way as well.
Yeah, I mean, the Army Court thinks the other way, obviously, but it seems like the dissent also thinks the other way. I suppose what really gets me about it is if you're giving the case to somebody else for efficiency's sake, it's only efficient if they rule differently from you. So how can it be efficient, but they then make the same determination as it applies to the unanimous verdict issue? Otherwise, it wouldn't matter who the military judge is. It's going to end up with a writ in the same exact posture that Dial and Ferrer were.
The interesting thing is, and I think maybe ACCA points it out, or at least the Defense Appellate Division in their briefs pointed out, military judge, the first military judge in this case is the only military judge to rule the way that they did about unanimous verdicts. So a little hard-pressed, but this is where it goes back to the whole disqualified versus recusal standard, right? It's improper reassignment, but not a disqualification or a removal, which you mentioned we'll get to, has to do with how we review this case on appeal.
Yeah. Okay, so it was a reassignment. The first military judge had an improper purpose, and the second military judge was not disqualified. That's the framing that was used to assess the actual certified issue question, which is whether or not there is structural error. And this framing is not favorable to Davis. When courts review errors at trial, it is usually accompanied by a prejudice test, which typically looks to how the error impacted the trial. There are a few different types of prejudice tests, but structural errors are something different altogether, because a structural error does not require a showing of how the error affected things. So structural error alone results in relief for an accused. Understandably, then, structural errors are going to be limited to narrow circumstances involving substantial matters of fairness. CAF acknowledges this, citing Greer from the Supreme Court, that error is structural only if it affects the entire conduct of the proceeding from beginning to end and renders a trial fundamentally unfair or an unreliable vehicle for determining guilt or innocence. Just like with the judges and impartiality, there is a strong presumption that errors are not structural, and that presumption was not overcome here. CAF reinforces this holding by pointing out that federal civilian courts also have never found a reassignment for improper purposes to constitute a structural error. As such, in order for Davis to get relief for the reassignment, there needs to be prejudice, which is the second certified issue. And James, can you take us through that?
Yes. So you mentioned Greer, which has been mentioned in previous CAF opinions. And we're talking about structural error where I don't have to show prejudice. This implicates Tovar Chavez, where you have a non-preserved, non-structural constitutional error, still harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
So, and very interesting on Tovar Chavez. So you often hear it cited for exactly that principle for non-preserved constitutional tests. You still apply the constitutional standard,
yes,
even for unpreserved errors. In this particular case, they're citing Tovar Chavez, but the cite to Tovar Chavez is for non-constitutional prejudice, which Tovar Chavez still says, but it's also not what the case is about.
No, it's part of their test analysis. So this is a very interesting decision. They could have cited a bunch of numerous cases for this standard review, but this is why you've got to be a steward of the profession and a steward of the case law, because there's little nuggets throughout all of these cases where they link them together. And I think it's not a coincidence that Greer and Tovar Chavez end up at the same opinion as it. The case escapes me right now, but I believe Judge Maggs cited both of those in a case, in a concurrence, talking about tests for prejudice. Because, again, the test for prejudice can make or break a case for you on appeal, and it's all about how it enters the system and how it goes through the system. And because we're not talking about constitutional error here, we're just talking about prejudice. And the reassignment is improper, that's fine. But because the second military judge was not disqualified from sitting on the case, we then have to look at Article 59 of the UCMJ for prejudice. And that test is whether the error materially prejudiced the substantial rights of the accused. And so essentially, the reviewing court is deciding whether there is a reasonable probability that the outcome would have been different had the error not occurred. And under this test, the CAF finds that the reassignment, even though improper, did not prejudice Davis. In particular, if the case was not reassigned and first military judge granted a unanimous verdict motion, the result would have been just a delay pending a government writ, which would have been decided in favor of the government. Then back at trial, there's nothing to suggest that Davis would have fared better at trial before the first military judge or a panel as a fact finder. It is interesting to note that Davis did provide an affidavit indicating that he would not have gone judge alone had he known about second military judge's comment about doing his part. However, the CAF cast doubt on Davis's statement as speculation because it was made prior to the second military judge's supplemental affidavit providing context to his comment. So the court can do no more than guess about Davis's forum preference in light of the additional context. With no prejudice for a non-structural error, the Army Court erred in providing relief to Davis. Therefore, the CAF reversed the Army Court's decision and remanded it back for further review of the other issues that had been mooted by this. It's interesting to note that this is not a unanimous decision. I've got two judges, Judges Sparks and Judge Johnson, who concurred that, yes, this was error, but also they found that this was prejudice, and they found that this was not a improper purpose, but also impartiality by the first military judge under RCM 902A.
They're also concurring that it's not structural error.
Yes. With that said, Major Britt, what are your takeaways for this case?
So at first I was thinking there's not really too much in regard to takeaways as it applies to trial practitioners. Because as I thought through the scenario, there's not many things that counsel could have done differently in this case or that counsel at trial really did wrong. Presumably it was known to counsel that the first military judge was issuing unanimous verdict decisions in other cases, which, because it's somewhat unique and monumental to have a ruling on a motion like that. So maybe defense should have been suspicious when the change in judges occurred, knowing that the first military judge was doing something unique in the field. However, the Davis decision was not impacted by issue preservation, and there likely would not have been additional or different facts elicited in response to an objection at trial. So I don't think whether there were more challenges that were made to the second military judge would have really affected anything on this case at all. But that being said, I do still think that there are takeaways, and I think that these are notes for appellate practitioners to consider, such as the importance of errors dictating the type of prejudice test that applies, which we've been talking about throughout. You do not normally see this many prejudice tests discussed in a single case. You have, at the lower court, the application of the forfeiture test. You have the no prejudice test with structural errors that was talked about. You have the heightened constitutional test. You have the standard Article 59 test. And you also have the special Liljeburg test for judicial disqualification issues that was talked about in the dissent. So for appellate practitioners, this underlies the importance of how the error is framed. The majority does a lot of setup work in this decision, especially with discussing the different ways a judge can come off of a case and casting the change in judges in this particular case as a reassignment. And I think that really drove the result as to how this case was decided, because if it was the disqualification and the majority was applying the Liljeburg test, they might have come to the same result as the dissent did.
Yeah, and it's very key to reinforce that you have to understand before you even get into the do I win or do I lose analysis, and this is why the process is so important, is you have to really dive into is what is the exact error that I'm looking at? And until I do that, and you notice the CAF has gone through numerous painstaking pages setting up what the error is, you have to know what that is before you dive into what the actual prejudice analysis is. And if they decided that this was a disqualification, my analysis is different, right? But because it's a reassignment, then I'm back into my statutory Article 59A prejudice analysis. And that is going to continue to drive these cases, as we've seen with this court, is if it's statutory, we are going to be ruthlessly applying that statute. And we are not going to try to find a way to go out of it unless we have to.
Yeah.
But with that said, I have no more parting shots in this case.
I do want to ask, since we're talking about takeaways, and I know you're both aspiring to law school and aspiring to the JAG Corps, what do you guys think?
So I understand CAF's reasoning for a lot of these points here. I think the thing that makes most sense to me out of all of this is that they rule that the first military judge reassignment was improper, but not improper enough to reverse Davis's conviction, because he still got his requested sentence. So at the end of the day, I don't fully grasp the in-depth differences between the structural error test, but it does seem to me like it didn't fundamentally affect the outcome of the case.
Mine's a little bit more rudimentary. I really like what was said in the ACCA case and what they had to say about it. Specifically, it outlines so many steps taken on the appellee's behalf where they were questioning, why did this judge, this first military judge, step down? They were trying to get to the bottom of that. And a big takeaway, I think, is fight for your client. You know, if something doesn't seem right, doesn't smell right, you have the obligation and the duty and the responsibility to pursue that. So just, you know, follow the money.
Well, I don't know about money, but maybe follow justice.
Follow justice.
So I think this highlights just that reasonable minds can differ. We obviously have ACCA going one way. We have even a split between the judges at CAF. At the end of the day, though, the majority sets the law. So what Davis says is the law as it applies to these facts. But thank you, Reagan. Thank you, Taos. We really appreciate having you here at CAF Chats, and we greatly appreciate all the work you've been doing at the Judge Advocate General's Legal Center and School this summer.
Thank you for having us.
Absolutely. And join us next time for CAF Chats.
Thanks for joining us today for another episode of the Criminal Law Department Presents podcast. If anything you heard sparked a thought, we'd love to connect with you. Your comments help us create better future content for the field or the fleet. Reach out to us on Facebook or Instagram. The information can be found in the show notes for today's episode. The views expressed in today's podcast are those of the presenters and not necessarily the Judge Advocate General or the Department of the Army or the Department of Defense.
Thanks, counsel, for both sides. The court will stand in recess until further order of the court.